Living today. Good Monday morning. Welcome back to In Focus here on News Radio KMAN. Brady Bowman with you. Now I'm here with departing provost and senior vice president at K-State, April Mason. April, during the break, we were kind of reviewing things almost, said this is your life sort of thing. Not quite, but close. First came to K-State in 2009. And before we get too much into weeds on all that, the provost and senior vice president for K-State. Okay, what does that mean?
What Brady's not saying is during the break, he said, what is a provost? I'll tell you, for the last 8.5 years, I've been answering that question. Chief academic officer is probably the easiest way to explain what I do. Anything related to academics, I'm involved in hiring the deans of the colleges that work so hard in moving our university forward. I coordinate with the Kansas Board of Regents on our academic programs, new academic programs, assessment of our current programs, and work very closely with them. And I think we're really blessed to have a great Kansas Board of Regents staff that work very closely with the universities. But my title is provost and senior vice president, so I am work very closely with President Myers and assume duties with him and for him if he is unavailable. One of the things that distinguishes the provost from the president is the president is very outwardly focused at the university, clearly has many, many big responsibilities on the university and with the university, but a lot of their work is external with the legislature, with the Board of Regents, with donors and development activities. The provost is more internally focused, working with faculty, with students, with other administrators. We've worked tirelessly to support students in being successful at Kansas State University, and that's everybody's responsibility at the university, our faculty, our staff, our student life professionals, our housing and dining people. It's really, really important. Our advisors play a key role. So these are the kinds of things that I work on collectively with many other leaders at the university. But chief academic officer is probably the easiest way to explain what the provost does.
And give us a little bit of a background as far as your background, kind of where you grew up, what got you into this line of work in the first place.
Well, I come from a long line of educators. My grandmother was a teacher. My mother, sister, brother were teachers. And I think I knew that I was going to be going on to college and graduate school from a pretty young age. I went to graduate school at Purdue University and actually started my academic career as a faculty member there. Worked both at the college and department level in administrative positions, and then moved to Colorado State University as the dean of the College of Applied Human Sciences. And I think a provost is kind of the super dean. A lot of the same kinds of responsibilities, some distinct ones, but a lot of the same types of responsibilities as the deans of our college. We had a group of admissions representatives 1 year that were asking the same question you are. You know, what is a provost? What does a provost do? And I gave them this same line of answer. And finally, one of them said, "What sounds to me like you're the queen of the deans." And I said, "You know, I like that.
Queen
of the deans." So
that is good.
Informally, the chief academic officer, the provost, is the queen of the deans. Now, I suppose if we have a male provost, he would be the king of the deans. But I'm the queen. And we got a good chuckle over that.
That is good. And that background, just having so many examples before you with your family having that long line of educators, what was it that made you decide you want to kind of continue that tradition and not just branch out into something else?
Well, I think I knew that I wanted to go into education. And probably the biggest change in my trajectory was deciding to go into higher education administration rather than staying in a faculty role teaching and conducting scholarship. And that really comes from a mentor of mine. Avanel Kirksey was a senior faculty member at Purdue. And she invited me to think about going to a program called the HERS Institute for Women in Higher Education Administration. She asked me if I had thought about it, and I didn't even know what it was. So I, at her advice and counsel, I went to that three-week program at Bryn Mawr University so many years ago and really got interested and shared with administrators back at my university that that was my interest, and I think they looked out for opportunities that would help me in that way. And I accepted some additional administrative responsibilities after reaching full professor. So I really owe Avanel thanks, and she gave me some different direction and advice and counsel, and she was an incredible, incredible mentor to me.
And how early in your career was that? I guess kind of what time frame was that back then?
So when she talked to me about this program, I had just been promoted from assistant to associate professor, so just gained tenure at my university. So it was very early, but it was helpful. I didn't take on any new administrative responsibility, but was planning for it, and so did not do anything for about 6 years after that. I think that was good to plan and think about it and to share my aspirations with people who could assist me with opportunities for that would guide me. So I'm really been blessed with wonderful mentors and people that I worked with.
And I guess as far as like kind of decades, was that like 90s, 80s?
Okay, Brady. Okay. 90s. Let's go 90s.
We'll go 90s.
Okay. it was the 90s probably when I took my first administrative experience. I went to Bryn Mawr in 1989, so you weren't so far off. But my first administrative position was probably 1996.
And what was the landscape as far as for in higher education, as far as women in those administrative roles in colleges? Was it getting to the point where was it rare at all, or was it difficult at all?
It kind of depends. You know, it's only been in the last number of years, probably the last decade, that we're seeing women as chancellors and presidents, and more women as provosts and senior vice presidents. I think, again, I've been very, very, very fortunate in my career that I never felt forces that said, you know, you've hit the glass ceiling because you're a woman and you can't go any further. I'm really glad to be able to say that. I had mentors that were men who took very strong interest in my career development, and I had mentors that are women that took strong interest in my development. I think that's very important that when working with individuals, we see them as professionals, that we don't see them as one gender or the other, and promote individuals on their merit and what they can achieve. Yes, are there different styles of male and female administrators? I'm sure there are, but there are different styles of many different things, and we bring our own strengths. I have strengths that maybe are more feminine, and I have strengths that are probably more masculine, and that doesn't really matter in this area, I don't think at all.
Well, and what it sounds like, just kind of your family and the mentors that you had, just it, as far as obstacles in your way, probably you never saw anything like mm-hmm. that because you had all these examples in front of you and mentors in front of you.
Well, if I could tell you a bit of a personal story, I'm one of five children. And when my parents celebrated their 50th anniversary, the five of us said, you know, what do we get our parents? You know, they are very successful. They've done well. They are 50 years into their marriage. And I took a suggestion from a friend who also had a large family, and we got the terminal degree diplomas of each of the five of us, three PhDs, a master's, and a bachelor's degree. And I got the job of taking those and getting them all the same size. My brother's PhD from Stanford looked like a postage stamp, and my sister's PhD from Berkeley was huge, so I had to make them all the same size. And I had to be working with the originals, which was pretty scary. But we got them all put together in kind of a collage on one piece of paper and had it framed, and that was the right gift. My parents gave us an education and the will for an education, and they made sure we got our first degree. And after that, we went further, but it was exactly the right gift. It was a very special thing for both my mother and father.
With education just being so prevalent, especially, you know, four siblings that all are very accomplished in education, I'm sure your siblings just pushed each other, right? You've had to have a little bit of rivalry in a way, and a little bit of like, well, you're doing that. Well, I'll do that too, and I'll go farther or whatever.
Well, it's interesting you say that. We're kind of spread out, 5 and 15 years. So maybe the first three who were in the first 5 years, maybe they had some sibling rivalry. But we all went in different directions. You know, a civil engineer, theater major, a middle school teacher, a high school teacher in industrial arts, myself as a nutrition professional, and then higher education administration. We've all gone very different directions, but we all saw the need and the importance of education and continually learning.
And did you get that from, I assume you got that from your parents as well, as maybe not necessarily, did they have that wide range of different avenues and fields to look into? It didn't seem like there's maybe any specific direction in where to go, just as long as you were just pursuing education, whatever form it was.
Absolutely. And let me go back to the gender issue again. Two boys and three girls, and it was never, okay, girls, you need to be teachers or nurses or some secretaries or something, and boys, you need to go do something else. It was, what do you want to do, and we're going to help you try to succeed in doing it. So I think I was instilled on by the very beginning from my parents, you can do whatever you want to do, work hard. And that was something very important, a work ethic and an importance of integrity and a sense of humor as well. And that goes a long way in whatever job you are. It certainly has gone a long way in being provost, having a sense of humor and being willing to laugh at yourself when you have to. Some of you may remember that we're coming up on the first anniversary of April Mason falling off the commencement stage last May, my most embarrassing moment.
I didn't hear about
you didn't hear about that?
I didn't.
Well, it was pretty dramatic. They took me away in an ambulance, even though I was pleading with them not to. I was uninjured. I mean, some pain and some bruises and a bonk on the head, but nothing broken. I was very, very fortunate. But the next commencement, I fell off the stage at the Arts and Sciences College commencement. So the very next commencement in December, I came to commencement all robed up with my bicycle helmet on, with my mortarboard on top of my bicycle helmet. And I thought the dean was going to die laughing. I took it off before we went out on stage. But you got to have a sense of humor and be able to laugh at yourself.
You know, we have something in common in that, because my high school graduation, it wasn't the actual commencement, but what the baccalaureate, is that what they call it?
Mm-hmm.
The day before. Yeah, we were doing the thing. We're to walk up, going on stage. I also walked off the stage senior year of high school. That was a fun moment. That was fun. I was well known in high school amongst my classmates, mostly for stuff like that. But let's go ahead and take our second break of the hour. We'll come back and talk more about K-State, all sorts of different issues with departing Provost and Senior Vice President April Mason here on In Focus on News Radio KMAN.